Welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a Vice President, Branch Leader with Fidelity Investments. And with me today is Tony Zing, Chief Market Strategist of Options Play. Tony is a frequent CNBC guest. Tony, welcome.
Thank you so much for having us, having me here, Roberta. It's been an interesting week in the market, so really looking forward to diving into what we see.
I believe that statement's been true for a couple of months now, so it's great to be back with you. Look forward to our conversation today. To all of our viewers, today is Thursday, December 12th, and economic news cycle, as Tony alluded to already, continues to kick out more data, and it ranges from consumer spending to inflation. So Tony, let's just go right in and get started with the macroeconomic view of the markets. What are you observing?
Yeah, so as you said, this week, you know, the big news was really on the inflation print. But if we take a step back and take a look at kind of where the markets stand, you know, last week we saw the S&P and the NASDAQ 100 both confirm new all-time highs, which certainly put a very bullish tone here to the overall market, especially since the NASDAQ 100 was lagging behind and we started to see that playing catch up, confirming those news highs. You know, a lot of investors got quite optimistic here on that particular signal. But, you know, as we go into this particular week, we see the fact that while large cap remains quite strong here, but when you look at IWM, you look at small cap, and you also look at the equal weight S&P 500 index, what you see is these indices no longer are confirming these new highs. So this is starting to signal a bit of a hesitation in kind of the bull market that we've seen since the election. And from my perspective, you know, what we're starting to see is a narrowing of the leadership that in this bull run here. We're starting to see growth outperform value by a very large margin here. Also, sector rotation has largely been stagnant since the election. We haven't seen much rotation. The sector that have been leading since the election, consumer discretionary, financials, communications, continue to be the sectors that are leading, and the sectors that are lagging behind, healthcare, staples, materials, are continuing to lag. So the fact that we're not getting any of this sector rotation is not particularly healthy for markets to go on for this long and not see some of the leading sectors start to lag behind and some of the lagging sectors start to show some leading tendencies. And especially with the inflation print that we just got here yesterday, you know, the trends for inflation are clearly continuing to trend in the right direction. And that means that we're likely going to get a 25 basis point cut here next week on the Fed interest rate decision. However, the strong labor market that we saw here at the end of last week, you know, leaves a lot of bit of room for the Fed to potentially pause or slow down the pace of rate cuts here going into Q1 and Q2 next year. And right now we're expecting that neutral rate to just be around that 375, 400 basis point level, which means that interest rates will remain elevated for throughout 2025. And I think that's going to be something that investors have to start grappling around, especially with valuations. If you look at the S&P 500, we're trading at over 22 times forward earnings on the S&P 500, which is certainly on the high end of the historical average. And I think this is a concerning for investors, especially for the long term. And it really means that we continue to see a fair amount of froth here in the markets. And so I think that for investors in this market right now, you have to be incredibly diligent in terms of what you're buying, what valuation you're buying them at, in terms of looking at opportunities right now.
Thank you for that perspective, Tony, and how that's high from a historical perspective. Can you share with us more about what is considered normal or what does average look like? And I'll ask another question perhaps on top of that. You started to go toward it. You know, what, if anything, should investors consider in their decision making, given that this measure is high?
Yeah, so like I said, right now the S&P is trading at about 22 times forward earnings. The long-term historical average going back about 10 years is 18 times forward earnings. So we're trading at a pretty significant premium relative to that long-term average. As far as what does that mean for investors? In the short run, if we look out kind of a time horizon over a year's time, it really doesn't mean a whole lot just because we have seen higher multiples in the past, right? So even though we're at relatively high or well above average, it doesn't mean that we can't go even further above average. We certainly have seen that historically. So, however, in the long term, if you look at, past 5, 10 years, the long-term expected return on the S&P 500 at these types of valuations is largely flat. So it really depends on kind of what your time horizon is on your trading, whether you're short-term or long-term. But then also, just generally speaking, because we are trading at such high valuations, that certainly means that there are plenty of stocks out there trading at very high valuations, and you just have to be a little bit more, much more careful in these type of market environments. Not to chase momentum stocks that are seemingly, non on a one-way train, because you have to consider kind of what valuations they're trading at right now.
Thank you. That's helpful and thoughtful. Thank you. So let's shift. I understand that we've got our two trade ideas lined up here for today. Tony, can you share with us your first trade idea when you're thinking about finding opportunity in our current market?
Yeah, the first one I want to take a look at here is Alphabet. Because one, I think that there are reasons to look at this from a timing perspective, but also, as I was talking about before, from a valuation perspective, this is one of the few mega cap tech names that actually are in the AI space that are trading at very, very reasonable valuations, actually arguably very cheap valuations, and I think is important to take a look at, especially as you kind of see some of the news recently coming out from Alphabet on both their advancements in AI as well as quantum computing. So if you look at a chart here of Alphabet, this is a stock that over the last 9 months or so is largely traded in a range bound, actually lagging behind the overall market. But recently, it kind of first broke out above a major resistance level at 170. That was the first sign that this is starting to turn around a little bit here. But more importantly, this week we recently just printed a new 52-week high. So when you see stocks break out to new all-time highs and outperform the S&P at the same time, that's usually a pretty strong signal that we can see some further continuation higher here on this particular stock, and it's going to break out and continue moving higher here. But actually, this is really where I think for a lot of investors who see stocks similar to Alphabet in this particular example, have to be a lot more careful, especially in this type of market environment from a valuation perspective. And that's what I like about Alphabet, because it's only trading at about 19, 20 times forward earnings. On the move yesterday, we're now seeing a trade just around 20, about a little over 20 times forward earnings. And compare that to the industry average, which is just around 20 times forward earnings, it is in line with industry average. However, if you look at what we expect from Alphabet going forward, growth metrics, we're seeing EPS growth that's head and shoulders above the industry average. We see revenue growth that's also substantially higher than the industry average. And more importantly, net margins, meaning for every dollar they earn in revenue, how much do they generate in terms of profits? Their net margins are 27% versus the industry average is half of that, around 14%. So the fact that you have a company that's growing faster than the industry, more profitable than the industry, yet it trades at the same valuation as the industry, this is really where I think that from a valuation perspective, you actually have substantial upside potential here left in Alphabet. And you look at what they've recently just announced this week alone, you have Gemini 2.0 that they just announced yesterday, a pretty significant leap forward in terms of their AI tools, really kind of competing with what ChatGPT has been doing for the last few months, arguably leapfrogging what ChatGPT is doing. And then recently they just announced this week, their new quantum computing chip that's going to make leaps and bounds, capabilities in terms of their ability to revolutionize AI from a computational perspective. So Alphabet really kind of firing on all cylinders right now, to kind of offset some of the concerns that investors may have that what revenue they might lose to for their search business because of kind of what the advancements that firms like ChatGPT and Claude have been able to claw away from, Google search revenue. So for those purposes, I think Alphabet is coming back punching hard after what looks like has been the, they've been falling behind a little bit the curve over the last 6 to 9 months. So I think that you have a very compelling investment here for Alphabet, and I think the best way to take advantage of this is to utilize options, especially when you have stocks trading at new all-time highs. The risk of a pullback here is relatively high. So I think the way to try to capitalize on potential upside here is to use a debit spread. And I'm going out to the February expiration. I'm looking at buying the 190-215 call spread. So I'm buying the 190 calls and selling the 215 calls against that. Earlier today, you can pay about $9.80 for that debit spread. And that gives you a maximum reward of about $1,500 while risking just under $1,000. So about a 1.5 to 1 risk reward ratio. And in this particular case, you're risking $980 per contract on a $190 stock. You're looking at just under 5% of the stock's value that you have at risk on this particular trade. And what we're trying to do is capture further upside while limiting our downside risk to just 5% of the stock's value. And this is kind of where the debit spread structure makes a lot of sense on a breakout like this.
Thank you so much for explaining the structure of the trade. And I'm always interested, and I think our viewers are also, in the practicality of trade management. Can you share with us some ways you would consider managing this trade? You've already structured in a way that limits potential downside. If your thesis doesn't come to fruition, what are some ways you could manage this position?
Yeah, that's a really great question because even though this strategy in itself has defined risk, right? Like the most you can risk is $980 per contract or roughly 5% of the stock's value. You can still further mitigate this risk even more by managing this trade prior to expiration. And the rule of thumb that we always have with a debit spread structure like this, and it applies to both debit spreads or if you're just simply buying a long call or a long put, any type of debit structure, is to simply close out the trade if you've lost 50% of the premium that you've paid on this particular trade. So if I'm paying, let's just call it $10 on the debit spread. If you lose $5 on the debit spread, it's time to consider cutting losses on this trade and saving the other $5 potentially for your next trade. And the reason behind that is because if you lose 50% of the premium that you pay on a debit spread, debit structure like this, chances are the trade is not working out the way that you expect it to, certainly not in the time frame that you're expecting it to by February expiration. So for those in that particular scenario, it's better to kind of save the other half of the premium that you do have left on the trade for the next trade rather than just holding on to this trade, hoping that it's going to come back to break even or profitability, because chances of that at that point, once you lose 50% of it, is pretty low.
That's helpful strategic thinking. Thank you, Tony. So let's move on to your second trade of the day. What else are you considering when you're looking at opportunity in the market?
Yeah, so in this type of market environment, as I was talking about in the first segment, where I was talking about the fact that markets are starting to look like there's hesitation. We see the fact that small cap and the equal weight index indices are no longer confirming new highs. Well, we're starting to see a little bit of hesitation, and that leads some stocks that are trading, especially at high valuations, to potentially take a pause and potentially even start to pull back a little bit. And one particular name I want to take a look at here is Analog Devices. They produce semiconductor chips for the industrial, largely for industrial purposes and automotive purposes. And what we're starting to see is some pretty significant headwinds build for this specific type of semiconductors. You have slowing growth in this particular company. You have increasing inventories, and I think just the declines that we're starting to see from the automotive sectors are starting to weigh on this particular stock. So if you look at the chart here, ADI recently broke down from a trading range below its key 220 support level. And when you break down below a support level while underperforming both the S&P 500 and the sector itself, and momentum has certainly turned negative, this starts to raise some downside risks. And I think that there's a higher likelihood that this stock revisits the $200 support level next rather than continues to break back above that 220 resistance level. And then if you look at the valuations, this is really where I think we have to be very careful when you have to look at valuations these days. You know, we're trading at 31 times forward earnings for analog devices. Now, when you consider the fact that, yes, they are expected to grow faster than its industry at the moment, modestly versus its industry, but if you look at both revenue and net margins, they've continued to decline year over year for the past year or so. You know, this really reflects the fact that, you know, companies like this are continuing to struggle in this inflationary environment where rising costs and operational inefficiencies are eating away into profits at companies like this. And, you know, it's not just costs are rising, but when revenues are declining, that's really a big concern for me. And when you're trading at such rich valuations and revenues are declining, and you have an outlook of the automotive industry that does not look particularly strong here at the moment, I think some significant downside risks are involved at the moment. So I think the trade structure that I want to use here is very similar to the one I'm using for Alphabet, but on the bearish side. So I'm going out to the January expiration and I'm buying the 220-200 put spread. So here I'm buying the 220 puts and then selling a 200 put against that to offset some of the cost of buying that 220 put. And earlier today, you can pay about $6.15 for that debit spread, giving me a risk reward of over 2 to 1. My maximum reward here is over $1,300, nearly $1,400 on this particular trade, while risking only $615 per contract. So on a two, you know, over $200 stock, that's about 3% of the stock's value that I'm risking on this bearish trade structure that gives me a little over 2 to 1 risk to reward ratio if I'm correct and the stock revisits that $200 support level by that January expiration.
Thank you, Tony. In this conversation, you pointed out that both of these trades happen to be vertical spreads. Can you walk us through the fundamentals of a vertical spread strategy and really what to look for when considering this trade type?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, both of these are specifically debit vertical spreads. And debit vertical spreads are generally used for when you expect that the stock can make a fairly sizable move in a short period of time, because what this allows you to do is capture what we call positive risk reward ratio. So, in both of these structures, I can potentially make more than what I'm risking on this specific trade. But the trade-off that you make with this type of positive risk reward ratio is the fact that the stock does have to move a significant amount before the strategies are profitable. Now, I'm comfortable taking this type of structure because in Alphabet, I think it's way undervalued and I think the upside potential is there. The momentum certainly is there. On the flip side, on analog devices, I see some pretty substantial downside risk given the valuations it's trading at and just the overall trends for the business. So in both cases, I believe that there's a pretty substantial move that can happen, and that's the type of structure that the debit spread works best in. And at the same time, it allows you to take advantage of a sizable move with the least amount of risk possible. And that's why I've used a debit spread structure today in both cases. Not to mention the overall volatility in the market. If you look at the VIX, it's on near a 6-month low. So right now it favors being long volatility right now. And that's exactly what we're doing with the debit spread structure. So a lot of inputs that went into that decision-making process, but those are some of the reasons why I've chosen to use two debit spreads in this market environment.
That's helpful and informative. Thank you, Tony. So we do save time each time we meet in our conversation to look back at past trade ideas and see how they played out. I do find these moments particularly helpful because we can learn valuable lessons. So today, I understand you're looking back at your trade with Adobe. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, I took a bullish stance here on Adobe and going into earnings. This was a trade that was looking quite strong. We bought the December 510, 560 call spread. Right before earnings yesterday, before the close, we were trading near the upper end of that call spread. We paid about $15.95 for that debit spread. It was trading around $2,700 yesterday. But because of earnings coming out yesterday, despite the fact that they beat on earnings, they did miss on their outlook guidance and the stock got hit pretty substantially. We're trading below 4.8, 4.8, 4, 4.90 today. So, that $2,700 debit spread is now only worth $193 at this point. So for those reasons, it is time to close out this trade and simply move on. If you did not close out this trade before earnings yesterday, it is time to close out this trade and move on because my bullish thesis here for Adobe unfortunately did not hold up through that earnings announcement. And I'm at this point abandoning a bullish thesis here on Adobe.
Thank you. No one to walk away. Always helpful. Thank you, Tony. So before we wrap up today's conversation, Tony, can you give us an idea of what's on the agenda for next week?
Yeah, we've got a big week next week from an economic calendar perspective. The big one is really going to be focused around the Fed interest rate decision on Wednesday, but we have GDP numbers coming out, we have retail sales numbers coming out. So a lot coming out next week that's going to help inform kind of the shape of the US economy before we head into the holiday season. But the big announcement really next week is going to be the Fed interest rate decision. At the moment, there's about a 90% probability that the bond market is assigning to a 25 basis point cut here for next week. So that's what we're going to be looking at here during next week's session.
Well, that is definitely a lot to look forward to. Thank you for that insight. And this does bring us to a close. I want to thank all of our viewers for tuning in today. And Tony, once again, always, thank you for bringing us your thoughts and your trade ideas.
Thank you so much for having me, Roberta.
Absolutely. If you are interested in further details specific to Tony's trade ideas shared today, please join us in our midday market briefing, which is held tomorrow. And you can do that by visiting fideli.com/in-the-money follow-up. And if you're looking for further insights or if you missed the live show, be sure to sign up for the Active Investor Weekly newsletter to receive highlights of the trades discussed. You can do that by visiting fideli.com/Active Investor Weekly. That's Active Investor Weekly. Next week, we'll be back for another episode of In the Money. Take care.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options such as spreads, straddles, and collars as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you are most comfortable with. As with all your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play and are not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.